listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. This is session number 49, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts and OJ and Adam. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Doing good here. How's it going for you, OJ?
I'm doing very well.
Should I say RIP OJ, since, you know, the real OJ?
Yeah, OJ Simpson died today. Yeah.
I mean, that's not what it's based on.
I know. I'm just saying, since the real OJ died today, the real orange juice, the juice died today.
The most underrated running back of all time.
Man, so it was actually very interesting listening to Stephen A. Smith talk about him on ESPN. He's just like one of the best athletes we've ever seen, blah, blah, blah. But he will, of course, always be marred by the death of Nicole Brown. I'm like, yeah, dude, he killed her. Like, he wrote a book about it. He wrote a book about it. It was going to make interesting. Yeah. So I read this on ESPN. So, because I always was wondering about that book. I know that the book came out, but then if I had done it. But the funny thing about that is, so he got acquitted, obviously, in the criminal the trial, but then in the in the civil lawsuit that mm-hmm. happened around it, he was found accountable to the two murders. And so then essentially, you know, he owed them a bunch of money. He still never paid
Ron Goldman's family over in Goldman.
Yeah, I was trying to remember. Yeah. Ron Goldman. And so then the funny thing about this is what ended up happening for anybody that does not know about this book. So he was going to come out with this book, and it was going to cover a lot of his expenses, obviously, for stuff. But then so the Goldman people found out about this, and they're like, no, you owe us a lot of money. So essentially, they sued him for the rights of the book, and then got the rights of the book. So they renamed the book from If I Had Done It. Yeah, If I Did It. And then it's The Confessions of the Killer. Yep. It was a giant middle finger to them. And then, you know, they had to subsidize and give him some money. But instead of the like $3 million or whatever they're supposed to give him, they gave him 10%. He got $330,000. And then I think it was like a year later, he got arrested for, you know, aggravated assault, trying to get his stuff back or whatever in Vegas, if I remember correctly. But I thought that was very interesting. I didn't know anything about that, but I knew that there was a book coming out about it and all that stuff, right? You know, that was kind of rumored about it. But anyways, moving on from OJ Simpson here, and let's talk about another death sentence, I guess, in the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, that's our blue season, unfortunately. Let's say they are on death row, and they're
walking the green mile right now, dude.
Yeah, like, that's unfortunately. What they're doing. Yeah, let's be honest. They're strapped to the chair, and they're getting ready to throw the switch. Unfortunately, so.
Yeah, they're keeping alive. So, quick update for everybody. They're 42-32-5. They are 4-2-1 since the last time we had a session here. They are fifth in the Central, which stays the same. We are now 20 points behind the Stars, which obviously we won't be able to get to with only three games remaining. That is one more point that we have lost, because last session we were 19. We are 3 points out of the last wild card spot to the Vegas Knights. We'll talk a little bit about this in just a second. We're ninth in the West, which stays the same. We are 15th in the NHL, which actually moves up two positions compared to last session. We are 21 points behind the Rangers, which gains 1 point. But again, the biggest thing here is we're 3 points behind, which is a game and a half, really. And there's three games remaining. So essentially, if the Vegas Knights win one more game or we lose one more game, it's over. I'm pretty sure that they hold all the tiebreakers as well. So we need to win three games.
I think we technically have some of the tiebreakers, but yeah, what it comes down to.
They need to lose.
Yeah, but the fact is that the schedule we're going against the Canes, the Kraken, and the Stars. And that's a tough schedule for us.
Oh. I mean, the only thing I can sit there and say is the Stars may actually... Yeah, but they may rest some people too, because I believe isn't the Stars the last game of the season?
It probably is. Yeah, that makes sense since they're getting ready for the playoffs. So that is a good point, because otherwise the Stars are on fire. You know, they won like 9 out of 10 games, correct, I think, recently.
Yeah, which so in they may decide to, you know, roll the lines. It's not, this isn't the NFL where it's like, hey, we've already clinched in week 17 or well, I'm sorry, week 18 now in the 17th game. You're going to just rest everybody. The NHL doesn't really do that, but they can do that if they feel that everything is everybody's banged up. But if you are rolling, and if I'm playing really well, like I feel like my line's playing really well, our team's playing really well, you ain't sitting me. I'm playing because you want to keep that feeling going into the playoffs.
Absolutely.
It also could be for Dallas to make the decision to try to have some younger guys get some competition up at the NHL level before they run out of that eligibility, so to speak, and of the season. But regardless, I mean, it's
you
it's
also face take teams who are in second in the Metro with 107 points as well. So the Canes obviously continue to show up in the playoffs every year, and obviously so because they're a damn good team. So
that bunch of jerks. Cool. Yeah,
bunch of jerks.
Yeah, but except Jacob Slavin.
The Metro, except for Jacob Slavin. But the fact they're in the Metro Division, I'm not hating on them nearly as much. You know, if they were like, in the Central
or Boston. Kings are a team that I like watching, honestly. They are fun. I use the bunch of jerks as like from Barry Melrose, who called them that if no one doesn't know what I'm picking up with. This is back when after they won the game, they would come out and do some silly stuff on the ice or whatever. And this was like back when a couple of years ago. It's actually come to think of it, this way, they started at the 2019, the season. 2019, we won the cup.
I remember that. Yeah.
And they played dodgeball on the ice, which was pretty cool. So like they split the team in half and then put their gloves down in the middle of the ice and they all ran forward and played
the storm surge and all that.
Yeah, it's just something fun for the fans to stick around for the end of the game to see what's going to happen and for them to interact with their fans in a fun way. Right. So, but Barry Melrose didn't like it because he's an old school guy and, you know, he can honestly kiss my ass because he's never given the Blues the credit of the day, period. In fact, in the 2019, he thought that we were going to get swept by Boston. Well, he can suck it now. And also in 2020, thought that we would finish dead last in the Central and thought that, you know, we were going to be obviously, if it wasn't for COVID, things might be different, but who knows, right? Sure. But anyways. But they're fun to watch because they're a good brand of hockey. They have a lot of speed, younger players and stuff like that, with some good veterans in there too. Dougie Hamilton there for a while, and it's just fun to watch. But, you know, at this point, the Blues, again, have to win out, and Vegas has to lose out. Let's go to OJ here.
Mathematically, Vegas can still win one more game as long as we don't lose anymore.
Yeah, we have to win. So, I think we have to win outright.
If we win, let's see. If Vegas loses out, we don't have to win out. You see what I'm saying? Like, those are all the possibilities, essentially.
Yeah.
But yeah, if they win one game, then we have to win out in order. Yeah. So
and then they would have to lose.
That would be the tie, right?
That would put us ahead of them by one point.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if they threw a tie in there and tied us, then yeah. If we don't own any of the tiebreakers, then yeah. And then we still also could catch the Kings if they lose out or like just get a draw in their last three games and we win out. So like it's not impossible, but yeah, it's pretty unlikely. Yeah.
And by draw, you mean overtime loss, right?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Get the one point.
Go for the one point. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that we've been watching too much City with these 1 point draws. So,
I know.
We'll talk about that a little later.
Especially that one last Saturday where the draw of 0-0 goose eggs. Oh, man.
Yeah, that was exciting.
I'm glad I was at the Battle Hog game not having to watch that because, man, that would have been a 90 minutes of just torture. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Berkey once again saves us, but anyways, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But so OJ, what's your perception here? I mean, like obviously, I think you definitely are a little bit more optimistic when it comes to stuff than Adam or myself. I mean, if you have to give them a percentage chance of being able to pull this off, what would you give them?
whatever the stats thing says, I think it says I'll just 2%. Go with that.
2%, yeah.
It was 1%, and then we won right last now. Night, and the Knights lost. So it went from 1% to 2%. So we excelled by 100%, and we improved 100% in that aspect. If you want to talk percentages,
and the point is 1%
to 2%.
The point is also that you're coming to the end of the road here. Like, you don't have to prognosticate too far out. So, like,
right.
Yeah, 2% sounds about right. You need a couple good teams to lose games to bad teams. One of two solid teams, because I think their schedules are kind of easy, and that's part of the reason they got the nod too. Like, if they had to face like some real tough competition where they might actually lose 2 out of 3. Then it might be a little different, but.
Right.
So I saw a thing it was some sort of Blues fan forum thing on X, right? But it was pretty funny. It was just like saying that we had 1% chance. This was before last game and before Vegas obviously lost their game too. It was like we had 1% chance. And of course, all the memes are, you know, so you're saying there's a chance, you know, Floyd Christmas from Dumb and Dumber. And then all of a sudden our stuff increased to 2%. And everyone's like, whoa, 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 2%. You're coming on a little strong there, girl. Calm down.
Yeah, doubling.
I think that's actually pretty funny. Yeah.
The problem is looking at that schedule, though, it is an easy schedule. They're facing the Wild tomorrow, the Avs, the Blackhawks, and then the Ducks. They have an easy schedule coming up.
Wait, who's got 4 games left?
They have 4 games. They should only have 3. They have 4.
They could have 3 games.
No, they have 4 games left.
Yeah, you know, because that means we have 4 too then, right? I thought we had the same amount.
3, because I just looked at it.
Do we? Okay, let me look at the schedule.
No, you're right. We played 79. Yeah, that's what I missed. We have 3 games left. Okay.
Yeah, they have 4.
Yeah, that's where it is.
You're right.
So
they have 1
more. That's even more dire.
That's why it's so, even more, because the Giants.
They have another game, but we don't.
Yeah, the Knights need to lose 3 out of 4, basically. Yeah.
And not get any points.
They need to just shit the bet.
They lose. They lose. Not overtime loss, but loss.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be pissed if we fucking somehow this happens where, like, they lose, and then so we're there, right? We're on the doorstep, and it's like, oh, my God, this actually might happen. And then they win the last game, or God forbid we lose the last game. That's probably what will end up happening. We'll lose the last game. It's like, hey, you win, you're in the playoffs, and then we're going to end up fucking losing. Oh, God, that'd be
– yeah. Yeah.
Granted, the Knights have been on a little bit of a losing streak. They lost to the Yotes. That was shocking. Not surprising they lost.
They are. They're 6-3-1 in their last 10, but
they have not been good lately. They haven't been on it lately. And then the Oilers spanked them too yesterday, 5-1. I was paying attention to that game.
I hope that they. Oh my God. Because, we need them to stick to a 25% points percentage and not a point more.
Right.
If we want to catch them. It's
so hopefully we caught them on the kids. You know, they're on the decline. If anything, at least it's making Vegas sweat bullets right now. It's like, damn it, we just really want to clinch this thing, or like clinch a playoff spot, blah, 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 and they can't. So it's really got to suck in that aspect.
They're not going to be able to save bullets. Exactly.
Right. So at least we're going to make it.
But, you know, kind of this takes me back to the Vegas game we played against them. And it's really a shame that they couldn't win, because it looked like a game that the Blues should have won.
You talk about the one from last month, that one that won OT?
Yeah, I think it did. Vegas won
that
one.
We ended up losing in OT. It was
And the ref went out. Yeah, remember there was like a center line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Basically, like, the Knights got away with just gooning it up. Like, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, that the ref basically was like, I'm not calling anything but the most egregious shit. The Knights are already up a goal. So it's like, oh, cool, now it's hard to get back in. Yeah, that sucked, man. I wish that had been a normally officiated game, because – you know, there was some egregious shit in this that I feel like would have swung the game.
More power play opportunities. Exactly right. You know, and it makes the game a little bit looser as well. And the fact that more for the fact that we're not going to get bullied. You know what I mean? And then they're going to have to deal with the repercussions of it. You know what I mean? So even if the power plays don't happen, you just can't play that tight of defense, I guess, not even really that tight of defense, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the problem is that they get to goon it up after they're already ahead now because we're playing by a different set of rules because a ref went out. And now we're going to fucking put the whistle in our pocket. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like it kind of sucks because the integrity of that game was affected by that ref going out. You know, it's just it's a shame it was that way. But, hey, they're not dead yet. Maybe they still can get in there. But I doubt it.
Yeah,
same. Honestly, I don't even care that much. I just want to see them win out as best they can because they've been on a heater. At least, if, what is it, 6-2-2 in their last 10?
Yeah, 6-2-2. And against good competition as well. Against so, good competition. So, what's your point, OJ? Like, let's say Vegas wins two games, right? So, they win two games out of these last four. But if the Blues win out, it shows you something for the stepping stone for next season. You were that close to being able to get into it. You could have gone away, but you didn't. You stood there and you fought. You're taking the best punches that you possibly can, and you took them down to the last little bit of wire, right? So I think that it just shows a little bit more maturity of the team, hopefully, that can, you know, continue on to next season. But I this team itself, it's shown moments of brilliance, and it's shown moments of immaturity and disaster. So I think that we do need to get a couple more veteran players that can impact the game in a very helpful way that could potentially be the catalyst for something great next year, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I would go a different route with it a little bit because they did kind of seem to turn a corner here at one point. Like, I don't know exactly. I'd have to go back and look exactly when, but they did start playing with much more intensity here at a certain point. Like, they've been on a heater. And it's like, oh, they finally fucking got their shit together. That's kind of what it feels like to me anyway. So, you know, I mean, you obviously want to swap out some guys if you can, certain guys. But, you know, I'm more looking at seeing what we're going to bring up from the prospects we got, because we got some decent looking prospects getting ready, you know, probably could come up to NHL. I mean, Bolduc's been playing now, and you got Zach Dean up, and then maybe for next year, like, well, we won't get Snuggerud until like the same time potentially next season. So, but I think there's some other guys, but I'd be looking to add that. And then you never know, maybe one of these defensemen that you might want to get rid of, they might have played themselves up enough to now some other team will actually trade for them, and you can clear some contract or clear the contracts off your books and then see what you can do with some.
Yeah, because I think that's what really handcuffed Armstrong throughout pretty much the entire season was the money that was invested into the blue line, which was smart, but it just didn't live up to what he had planned. Because the players didn't perform. Obviously, when they don't perform, any decision you make looks terrible, right? So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's definitely paths to improvement, but the group they've got here seems, you know, like they actually have some potential to be something. So, it's cool. Yeah.
Hopefully they can start early with that identity next year. And again, the draft is going to be interesting. I know that we'll definitely cover the draft because it's going to be very important for the Blues. We'll definitely be talking more about the Blues for the offseason. Hopefully, you know, for the second season, which is the playoffs, you know, we'll see what happens. But let's transition here a little bit and talk about the Cardinals. So quick update for everybody here, because this is our first official update for the Cardinals. They are 6-7 this season. We are dead last in the Central, which is fifth for anybody that does not know. We are 3.5 games behind Pittsburgh, so not terribly too far out, but that's already a little bit with only 13 games played. You know, 3.5 games back is a decent amount. We are one game out of the last wild card spot. We are 10th in the NL, and we are 20th in all of MLB. And if we were going to be the best team in MLB, we'd be chasing the New York Yankees, which we are 4 games back. So everybody's still kind of, you know, encapsulated condensed when it comes to this stuff, because it's very early in the season. But not obviously the results that we would want at 6-7, not going to get anywhere on this one, but You know, so the question then comes to, you know, what and whom has stood out so far for this season? Adam, I'm going to go to you first here on this. I mean, like, what has stood out to you? Whom has stood out to you so far this season? What's your take so far after the
so far? A couple of surprises, I should say, for me. And I mean, you know, some folks may disagree with me on here. Is I think from a pitching standpoint, I was actually a bit surprised by that there's a little bit left in the tank from Lance Lynn, more than I thought there would be, considering his amount of innings that he's pitched. He only has an ERA of 2.63. So he's definitely showing up Michaelis and, you know, the others as well. You know, he's showing up him and Zach Thompson and all those guys. So I think from a pitching standpoint, I was actually surprised to see that. I really was.
Right.
Now, granted, he hasn't gotten a win yet, but I'm not going to fault him for all that either. I think a bit of the problem here is obviously some relievers. I mean, Helsley looked pretty good for the most part, but I know for us, was it Libertor?
Libertor.
Yeah, Libertor was not looking the greatest out there at all. And so that's been a concern of mine. From an offensive perspective, I have to say another standout player, at least recently for me, that I was kind of surprised by was Contreras. He's actually, I have to give it to Contreras. Like, he's actually showing up and he's actually, you know, making a dent here, so to speak, which I'm happy to report that. I mean, he has the highest OPS in our lineup right now. Behind, and in fact, Brendan Donovan is behind him, and who I was gonna, you know, shout out to him next for sure. I would say him, those two guys for sure. As far as, you know, and Herrera has been kind of a standout for us,
yeah,
a little bit,
I think,
as well.
So. Yeah,
definitely Herrera. Mm-hmm. Whereas I haven't really been seeing the likes, you know, from like Goldie or even Arenado all that much as far as what we're used to. And so I know that's bringing up some questions like, are we seeing the twilight years of the prime, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But overall, I think I'm not too concerned about this season yet. I think that we fared well in San Diego. I wish we could have at least split the series in LA for the Dodgers. I thought we came close. We did get close to one game, and I was like, hey, if we could split this series with the freaking Dodgers, who spent, you know, like billions of dollars for this team, that would put us on top, you know, and that would be a win in my book. But it's still really early on overall, so I'm not terribly concerned. While we are 6-7 and we're playing 500 ball, because, you know, we also still are dealing with some injuries and things as well. So I'm not sounding the alarms quite yet. I mean, it's still April, you know, it's still early April. So a lot of baseball left to be played.
Yeah, for sure. OJ, what's your takes here? I mean, who or, you know, what has stood out to you so far after these, you know, opening 13 games?
So actually, I've been impressed with Mason Wynn on offense.
Oh, yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
All in all, like, I mean, his numbers are down a bit now after the last game, but you know, he's looking like an average MLB hitter or so, or that's what his numbers say he is right now. Anyway.
Right.
But you know, I'm just really pleasantly surprised by his offensive development, and he's gotten more sure-handed on defense. So like. He's starting to look like he might be a real stud shortstop and we just, you know, what is he, like 22 or some shit? So,
yeah,
I'm pretty excited about that. I'd like to see Jordan Walker start hitting the ball in the air more. Like, he has just been hitting the ball on the ground a lot, but his defense has also improved quite a bit in the outfield, which I appreciate. You know, I mean, I think it's necessary for us to have a good defender out there. So, or at least competent, which he seems to be now. So that's nice. And his arm, like, teams respect his arm. They don't run on him. So that's already pretty nice. Let's see. Victor Scott has been
has been a revelation, really.
Yeah, in center field and on the base pass. But I mean,
yeah, but obviously not hitting well, but yeah, exactly.
He doesn't look like he's lost. Like, he makes good decisions on what to swing at most of the time, but like, and he's hit the ball hard a couple of times. He's, you know, sack fly, all that. He's finding ways to get on base, but it definitely seems like, you know, he could probably do with a year in AAA, but it's
yeah,
just,
exactly. Mm-hmm. When you're on base plus your slugging is only 300, you got an issue going on. You
know what I mean? It's a super small sample, but yeah, like
100%. Yeah.
I don't know. I bet you he, it might even be if they send him down for like half a year, maybe he, you know, give him a chance in AAA to see some of that and get acclimated to it and, you know, go somewhere where you can be a little looser to learn that stuff. Yeah. And then, you know, might even bring him back, you know, in the late in the year for a playoff push or something. You never know.
Yeah. So, and I think that's actually a really smart idea to your point, OJ. So like we say, Tommy Edman comes back, then you move down Victor Scott so he can get more at bats and stuff like that. And just tell him, hey, you know what? We could definitely use you as the fourth man in this rotation for the outfield, but you have to work on your batting. You know what I mean? Like this is, you can't just be defense or on the bat, on the base path guy. That's 2/3 of the puzzle. But you know, the hitting, let's be honest, is a big portion of that. When you're only batting 0.091 right now, I mean, he's got 4 hits and 44 at bats. That's a pretty abysmal, obviously. And I do want to circle back to one point that you just brought up about Jordan Walker trying to get the ball in the air more, right? This is a crazy statistic, not a crazy statistic, but it's very interesting to me. So Jordan Walker this season has only 6 hits, but 3 of them are doubles. And all 3 of those doubles were gappers that he hit these nice, like, line drives that went right into the gaps and stuff like that. To your point, if he gets some more air on the ball and not just put it into the dirt, he's going to be able to get on base way more efficiently. Sorry, I just had to bring that up because I wanted to bring that up earlier. But
yeah. No, I could have sworn I saw him hit one down the line too on the ground that kind of went off the corner of the stands, and then he had to, like, he barely made it slide into second. He had to do that swim move I forget which game that was, but. Yeah, I do kind of remember something like that. So I don't know. But yeah, it would be nice if he could get it in the air more. But he did it last year, so he's got the ability.
Yeah.
So just something's not clicking right now. Hopefully a coach can help him, you know, get it together. And then once he starts hitting, that'll help a lot. Because, you know, I do think Arenado's like 32 or something, right? So he might be a little young to be –
correct.
You know, in a super decline phase, so he probably should come around yet. Goldschmidt definitely is in a decline phase, like he's that age. But remember, hitters don't tend to drop off a cliff. It's usually a gradual decline starting at whatever age, right?
Right, so, yeah, he's batting 182 so far, so.
Yeah, which would be falling off a cliff. So what I'm saying is,
falling off a cliff.
As bad as Arenado is 245, you know.
Yeah. That's why I wasn't giving them a lot of credit earlier. The fact that it was
still early.
Yeah, it is.
That's my point.
They're not standing out by any means yet. But hopefully we'll find their group again.
Yeah. My whole point was just saying that it's unlikely that this is actually how Paul Goldschmidt's going to hit the rest of the year. Sure. Because it's not likely that he's fallen off a cliff, but you never know. Maybe he did.
Well, yeah, it's only been like, you know, how many games has he played in? Like 13 games, I think now. So.
Yeah, 13, yeah.
12 or 13
no, 12.
Games.
Yeah, Goldschmidt 12. Yeah.
Yeah. So 12
they
or 13.
They got a lot of season left. Too.
They've got, they have another 150 or 147 left or whatever they've got to be in or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, hopefully he can get his bat speed up again, too. I don't know. And as far as the pitching goes, I've been pretty happy with it in general. I'm kind of disappointed in Andre Pallante. I don't know if you guys, I've been reading all offseason about his stuff. Like, he's got some good pitches. Okay. Like, they say he's got a four seamer that he can manipulate to move to the side. Like, he's got some like unicorn pitches. Like, he can throw two different fastballs out of the same grip, essentially. Yeah, but it seems like he just hangs shit constantly and gets beat up when it happens. You know, like, I think he doesn't have the control he needs to be successful in the majors.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, especially, I think it was this past game where, like, Pallante just, like, you can see it was already starting to head bad. And for whatever, you know, Ollie just decided to keep him in there for a little bit longer and obviously ended up costing us.
Yeah.
It was this past game. It might have been the game before. I'm not
saying
isn't that just a common theme for him, right?
No, it was just
sort of dry.
It was either it was one of the Phillies games we lost. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. He didn't have it. And then just, oh, good luck.
Hang him out there. And
well,
it's like,
what's tough is you have to leave him out there for at least three
pitches. Yeah. Now it's a new rule. Yeah. For the new rule.
But yeah. I don't know how, I don't remember how long he stayed after that, but
it was more than three.
Yeah. It was like seven batters. You know, something like that. And it was just like, dude, he should have been done after
too long.
Right.
Yeah.
100%.
If it was the last Phillies game, I think they were working with kind of a short bullpen because they'd used most of their better guys the day before to secure the win.
Mm-hmm.
So
right. I've been noticing they're trying to keep Helsley only there for the ninth inning because obviously he kind of falls apart if you put him in the eighth and then try to close him out of the ninth. But he's been, especially the way.
First one. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what it was. So it was Pallante. Yeah, it was the last game, Josh, for sure. Because now I remember Helsley blew the first game against Philly. We could have won that one too, I think. That's the one that went into extras, right? So
correct. Yeah,
Mason went tying the game up down to the last strike. But you know what? You know what else chaps my ass about that one is that if I remember correctly, we had Brendan Donovan on first and they tried to steal with him for some reason. He got thrown out and he would have scored an extra run that would have made that Mason Wynn hit into the game winning single, would have walked it off instead. Instead we ran into an out with a guy that's not really a base stealer. I don't know if it was him that decided to go or if we sent him, but that might have been a little overly aggressive. Like, I'm not looking at Brendan Donovan as a guy going to be sending a whole lot, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, like, again, he's obviously going to be faster than, like, a Yadier Molina or a
faster than Yadier Molina now.
He doesn't have speed, but he's not a base stealer. Like, he doesn't have base stealing kind of speed, in my opinion.
Yeah, so. He's not Jordan Walker, Mason Wynn, or Tommy Edman. He's not any of those guys, right? So.
Yeah, maybe they thought they saw an opportunity to have him steal one, but like that sucks.
Obviously,
like honestly, the Cardinals have lost like three games that they probably should have won, and that was one of them. What was it? But there's another one where Goldschmidt couldn't hit a fly ball to, you know, score Victor Scott from third on a sac fly. He struck out instead, and that was a run we lost. You know, and so yeah, there's definitely been some winnable games, some games where if we had just not shot ourselves in the foot, we would have won them, and we'd be three wins better right now. That's the shit that pisses me off.
That would definitely be a different story in the division then.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, they have cleaned it up a lot from last year. I don't want to bag on too much because it's not like you're going to score every run you should or prevent every run you should. There's going to be mistakes. Right. It's just, man, you know, I'd really like to be just over 500 solidly instead of playing with that goddamn line again, you know. Just get me to like 15 games above 500 and then I can stomach, you know, all the odd losses and shit from there, you know, because like whatever, it's just a loss.
Sure.
Yeah, shit happens, right? It's a long season.
Yeah.
Especially when it's those type of things that are keeping you under 500.
Exactly.
So my thing here too is, so we've already talked about a lot of the guys that I wrote down here. So won't talk about whom stood out so far this season. The thing that stood out to me so far is the attendance. So the attendance for the Cardinals home games, and obviously we're working a very small sample size. It's not been great. So Gray, Sony Gray, our ace, right? Excuse me. Which was, you know, so he made his first start against the Phillies or whatever on Tuesday. That attendance was reported, and I'm actually reading this off of screenshots of this of this article. I can't remember what it was, but anyway, so the reported attendance for Tuesday was 31,972.
If you watch the game, right?
Yes, and that's what they're saying. But here's the thing about this. So first and foremost, a packed Busch Stadium is about 47,000 strong, right? So it's right around now. Tuesday's report, and this is reading directly from this article. Tuesday's report. A reported audience is the lowest for a Cardinals night game in nearly two decades at Busch Stadium and the fourth lowest in stadium history, which is crazy. Now, here's the thing about this. So photos were shared to social media of that Tuesday night game where how the crowd looks very sparse. And they certainly caught the attention of baseball fans, many arguing that 30,000 fans did not make it. In fact, one statistician looked at it and estimated that only 19,800 people made it. Yeah,
that sounds about right. So,
yeah. Now,
because I was watching that game and I was like, there is, because they reported the attendance on a broadcast, and I'm like, that might be sold, but that sure the hell isn't the number of people.
Well, Adam, it's like this game. It's like when we go to a Wednesday noon game. You know what I mean? And they're like, hey, look at the 31,000 people
there's
here.
45,000 like, so people. I'm like, yeah, right. Right.
There's so many empty seats. Obviously, they go off of the tickets they sold.
Well, of course they are, because because that's all that matters realistically. Well, I shouldn't say that's all that matters. Matters more than anything to them. But in reality, bringing people into the seats, though, should also matter, because that's also your brand. You know what I mean? You're losing 100%. That.
100%. Yeah.
And you're losing your loot. So the fact that Mozeliak got booed, during opening day shows you that you are losing. Skip. You're losing the grip of the most faithful fans in baseball. I mean, maybe everybody's going to say that
Skip Schumacher, who is the opposing manager, obviously former baseball player for the Cardinals as former outfielder, second baseman for us, got a bigger applause than Mo. And he didn't even play for the card, and he's managing the
To my point, it's stuff that we've talked about on this podcast a lot, that, you know, how are we going to get Mozeliak and the Cardinals to listen, to spend more, and to pick up players that we need, rather than Sonny Gray and two fucking guys that are almost 40.
You're going to have to hit where it hurts, and that's in the pocketbook at this point, because they're going to have to show up and be like, we're going to stop showing up. We're going to stop supporting this, because guess what? You can't get away with playing 500 baseball and expecting us to still continue to show up and support this crap. Well,
and the funny thing about it, Adam, is obviously you and I in the past two seasons have gone to probably at least
a lot of games. Absolutely.
We really have. But it's dwindled down. I mean, I know that we got one game that we're coming up but I have no desire. Yeah, I have no desire to go back. And I'm not joking. I've been called twice and emailed three times from the Cardinals people, talking about trying to get me tickets. I'm like, dude, you can't give me the tickets. I don't want to be there.
They're begging me. Yeah. I'm not joking, Josh. There's just somebody that's literally begging me almost daily, emailing me for Cardinal tickets. This chick keeps reaching out to me and say, hey, we saw you experience amazing seats at Busch Stadium. If you'd like to learn more, you know, about all-inclusive areas, blah, 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 you know, I'll set up a call with you. And she's probably emailed me at least a dozen times. They're hurting.
And that's what I was just about to say. It shows me that they actually truly are worried about the attendance now.
Yes.
And I think that's what's going to end up happening, is that Mozeliak, first and foremost, I think Mozeliak is going to be gone after this season, whether he steps away or what did he say? It was like, he's going to stick around for like two more years, then he's going to retire or whatever. I think that either they're going to say
it's his last year.
It's 2025. Okay. So not this season, but next season's his last year, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So he might stick around, but I truly believe that DeWitt's going to have to make a decision here and be like, dude, okay, listen, I understand that for 25, unless you can get things done before this season's over, especially if we stick to this, where we're 6-7, if we end up being like, fast forward 3 weeks in the future, and say we're like 4 or 5 games under 500, if I'm DeWitt, I'm like, dude, like, I love you, but my hands are tied. Like, you have got to make something happen here. This isn't what we wanted to head towards at the offseason. There was other people that were 100% available that we didn't go get. But again, DeWitt also might be saying, this is your budget. Deal with it. We don't know. And that's the problem with being in the Cardinals situation right now. So listen, as much as people give me shit about being a Yankees fan, the Yankees at least have always been fucking transparent about where they're at with their payroll. You know, if whether they're spending or they're not spending. In the 90s, they weren't spending nearly as much. In the late 90s, they started opening up a little bit more, and they were very aware of that. I feel like even being at this point in time, even being a Tampa Bay Rays fan would be easier. Yeah, we know that we don't have a big payroll. We know that anybody that like hits stardom, we're going to trade away or whatever, or just not re-sign them, whatever. But at least we know that. You know where you stand, man. It's like being in a relationship where you're like, like, are we good? Are we not good? Like, I kind of like it, but I kind of don't like it. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's one of those things that it's much easier to swallow when you know where you stand. If Mazzaglia came out and said, listen, guys, we're going to, like, after everything was said, done, if he came out and goes, listen, I know this is where everybody wanted us to be at, but there wasn't anything that was advantageous for us, but this might be a little bit of a rebuilding year. Not whether this, oh, I think this is the team that can win it all this year, because that's what it's like. It's like, that's so robotic. And do you really believe that this roster can compete with some of the others? And I'm not even considering the Dodgers or you know, the Padres or even the Mets or the Yankees at this point. Just look at Houston still. You know what I mean? Look, compare yourselves to Tampa Bay. It's just, I don't know, man. And we've talked a lot about it, and I'm not trying to get too worked up about it because we do need to move on to different subjects. But to me, I think that that's been the thing that stood out to me so far was the fact that I truly do see the ire of the Cardinals fans right now with, you know, with the franchise and organization, you know, that's why they're not showing up to games.
So. Yep.
But
yeah, yeah, definitely. I think a lot of it's the shock jocks that fishing for outrage too these days that got people thinking shit's just way worse than it is.
Like, worse than it is.
That's the 100%. Other thing. Yeah. Like the way people lost their mind over the Ollie Marmol extension and all that shit's like, holy fuck, what are we doing here, people? Like, I mean, it's like people are going back to when they're like children and they're just reacting to things without taking even a second to think about it. I don't understand.
That's not just, you know, with sports fans in St. Louis. That's just everything across the fucking board. No one does any research anymore. It's first reaction, but, you know, let's not talk about social issues, obviously. Yeah, 100%, you know, and that's why, I mean.
And it's kind of the same here. I mean, it's like the headlines. It's like, if you're not a follower, you're not actually looking at the details and you're looking at just the perception, then, you know, it's hard for you to really kind of like be taken seriously, I guess, if you're not actually looking at the inner workings of what's happening, you know?
Right. Yeah. I agree with that.
But they need to be transparent too, to your point though earlier, that I agree as far as like, hey, this, you know, at least
we
provide,
don't need to know
I understand
everything.
They're not going
to
expose, they're not going to show their whole hand, but at least give us a little bit of like, the fan base, like a little something of what we're, you know, what your expectations are, I guess, you know, try to be a little bit more transparent, I guess, try to be a little bit more like communicate a little bit more, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah. 100%.
I think they can, there's improvement for rooms for improvement there for sure.
Listen, so going back to the relationship kind of analogy that I had earlier, right. It could be like this, right. They're your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever on the opposite side. And they're thinking at this point about breaking up with you. Right. But instead of just being like standoffish where they're not responding to texts or not returning your phone calls where it's like, okay, well, they're trying to like make you break up with them. If they literally took the second and be like, hey, so I got some stuff that I got to think about. Or like I got a busy week at work. So just expect my responses to be limited. Obviously, they could be an excuse or whatever, but there's some communication that we expect. Okay, after this week, then cool, we're gonna understand where we're at or this or whatever. Also, too, let's be honest, we're all fucking human beings and true adult and grown adults here for the most part, right? I don't know about my maturity aspect, but you know what I mean. We can read between the lines a lot of that stuff. So if a girl did that to me, I mean, I'd be like, okay, cool. She's obviously thinking about something in our relationship as well. But she's going to reach back out to me. And the best thing that I could do is to give her that space. Mazzaglia it's not going to sit there and say, oh, hey, guys, give me space, you know, okay. But he can easily just sit there and say something to that effect. I don't need to know exactly what's processing in your mind if you're not willing to share with it. If he's just going, well, sorry, guys, it just wasn't in the budget. You know what I mean? He can easily say something a little bit more craftily and being like, hey, you know, with what we looked at with our budget constraints or whatever have you, the value to what we were looking for was just not there. So then we understand where the Cardinals are at. You know what I mean? If that makes sense. We're not going to go out there and we're going to spend a bunch of money on players, which we kind of know already, but at the same time, that's what the market dictates. So if you say you're going to go out and get a guy, you got to go get a guy. You're not going to sit there and just go, all right, well, we know the Yankees are going to offer you $50 million, but would you come to St. Louis for $40? You know what I mean? So I don't know. That's just kind of my feelings on it, I guess.
Yeah, their budget's their budget. That's really what it is. Like, I guarantee you, Mozeliak would spend. I guarantee you spending the maximum amount of the budget that he's allowed to spend, basically. Right. Like, no GM's going to shoot themselves in the foot unless they're trying to save money for another purpose. Like, you know, sit around, you know, maybe we got an extension for some young guys coming up or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
But they're not going to, like, not utilize all their resources to the fullest. So, you know, if you're mad about them not spending enough money, it's probably almost certainly DeWitt's fault. But
right.
At the same time, you know, you also money doesn't necessarily make you good, and not spending money doesn't necessarily make you bad. So, like, to an extent, you do have to evaluate everything on the moves themselves. Like, has Lance Lynn been good? Has Kyle Gibson been good?
Right.
They've been okay so far. They have their underlying numbers as far as getting whiffs and stuff suggest that they should get much better results going forward, too, as they get more opportunities. So, yeah, I mean, if they wind up being pretty good pitchers for you, that you got for 1 year, by the way. So you're not even tied down to them. So that gives you lots of flexibility for next season. So you could see who might come up from your own minor league system. You know, maybe you sign a different pitcher then. You have options. But my point is, if it works out, does it even matter if they spent the money? If you can win a World Series on the cheap, I mean, as a fan, I don't care. If you can win it on the cheap, win it on the cheap. You know what I'm saying? But you lose that argument when you're not winning, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, because you take a look at the two teams in MLB that have 10 wins so far in the season are the New York Yankees and the Los Angeles Dodgers. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? So, again, to your point, I understand completely, but as you just pointed out, you lose the argument for trying to do things on a cheaper budget when you don't get results. You know, 6-7, I mean, I don't care if we're 12 or if we're dead last, 6-7 is not, you know, going to help us win anything. So.
Yeah, and I will say, too, like, you can't even use the Dodgers in comparisons. Like, the Yankees are in the realm of reality still, but, the Dodgers are literally, like, Manchester United to, I don't know, STLSC, basically, as far as resources go. Like, it's ridiculous. And, I mean, that's compared to the vast majority of the league. Like, teams, the only teams outside, and they're even close.
Sorry about that, guys. I thought I muted myself. I was telling my dog to shut up. I wasn't talking.
Oh, okay. I was wondering what you said. I just realized.
I didn't really hear what he said either.
Yeah. No, I literally just, I go, shut up. And then I looked up and I'm like, oh, crap, I didn't mute. My bad. I'm so sorry, OJ. But my dog was
shut up, OJ.
Yeah. I know. I couldn't tell what you said, but I was like, oh, is Josh trying to say something? I don't want to talk over him. All right, so
just be louder. Yeah.
all good.
Well, anyways, obviously we will continue to watch Cardinals and see how they progress, and we'll have probably deeper conversations. And my thing is, hopefully the team can get healthy and stay healthy, because that is part of the game as well. Right. So let's take a look at a little bit of the Battle Hawks here. So just a quick update, because there's not as much to talk about in here. Yeah, good call. We are 1-1. We are tied for a second in the XFL division. We are tied for third with 4 teams in the UFL. So again, it's very early in the
week. So
yeah, exactly. It's only been 2 weeks, right? That's what I said. It's very early in the infancy here. But OJ, I'm going to start with you on this one. What do you think that they have done well, and what do you think that they kind of need improvement on?
So they did seem to kind of strike gold with their running back in the most recent game. And they did. They had trouble running the ball in the first game, but they kept trying to force the issue, which to me, I'd like to see the coach be a little more adaptable there. because I really think you got in the modern offense, you really ought to be running whatever you ought to have enough variety of looks and stuff that you can tailor your approach to what the defense is giving you. So when right. we're trying to like, oh, we need to mix in some runs to keep them honest or whatever, like maybe mix in less runs because you're getting stuffed every fucking time and you're passing the ball right. all day. So like, you know, I'd like to see a little more adaptability, but you know, let me think. I think that our secondary is kind of, it feels like it's been kind of weak anyway. I'm not sure. It does yeah. feel like you have been able to throw against us pretty good. I haven't looked at numbers though, to be fair on some of this stuff.
Well, and that's the thing about it is like there's really not one single source that is holding a lot of these statistics because it is the UFL. Yeah. Hence why I wrote out and put my hat in the ring for ESPN. Oh, not terribly too long ago. actually, OJ, did I tell you about this? Did I show you this or we talk about this at all?
No.
So this is crazy. So they put up, it was an article on ESPN that said, hey, check out all the uniform or the uniforms for the right before the season started. Here's all the uniforms for all 10 teams in the UFL. I'm like, dude. So I literally got on like their support thing. Because I talked to Adam right afterwards. I'm like, this is ridiculous. It's like the ninth article I've seen between them and Sports Illustrated and all these people where they just get stupid stuff like this wrong. So I'm like, God, like, I'm like, I'm going to say something. So I actually did. I sent in something to like the customer support and be like, listen, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but if you want me to do it, I'll maintain the statistics and I'll write these damn articles. I don't care. I can use ChatGTP for all this crap. I don't care, but I can keep all the statistics. I'm just like, I want like somebody to like make it look like they know what they're talking about when it comes to the UFL stuff, right? And so I got a response like, you know, thank you for your concern. It's been sent to the right bucket, essentially. But then literally right after that, I checked the article mm-hmm. and they changed it from 10 to 8. So I'm like, hey, I made a difference.
It's like, wow, they actually did fact check it. But I looked and seen who the writer was. Yeah, and I seen who the writer was, and I looked him up, and he's a basketball writer. He doesn't write for football or XFL, UFL, none of that. They probably just assigned it to him. It's like, here you go, dude. It's like, okay.
So this is actually funny, right? If you go to ESPN, ESPN.com/UFL, right, and you get their homepage, uh-huh. right, the top headline, UFL's Battlehawks reach a deal with A.J. McCarron. That was written back in February. Like, wow. How have we not had more news?
The season we're started.
Two weeks into the season. Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, you got to be some kidding me, stuff. Right? So, anyways, yeah. that's hilarious just to me.
Remember, it's all about catering to the lowest common denominator these days, wherever whatever group has the most eyeballs. And right now, the ratings don't say that you should write articles about the Battle Hawks because, or any.
Well, if
UFL
they're going
teams,
to, at least make sure they're accurate. Come on now.
That's what I'm saying. Well, like it just had the professionalism. You're ESPN for God's
that's
sake.
True.
You know what I mean?
Because that almost does that's seem like that's what that dude did was like just put it in ChatGPT and put that shit up like, on the internet. Yeah. Like, here you go. You want to make me write about the UFL? All right.
I'll literally gave it the most minimal effort ever. he's like the kid. He's probably like me. I procrastinated and you're like the night before, you know, I'm supposed to write this big report and I'm just like, no. Nah. And I'm like cramming this thing, like writing it as fast as I can, like on the bus and like in the class, like trying to just write crap to turn in something. And I'm like, it's words on paper here, you know?
Yeah. And from what I hear about the way some of these publications run these days, it's like, I wouldn't put it past him. Like, this is something this guy did not want to do, but some guy's like, you're doing this. We need the article. You're the one that drew the short straw. Fucking get it done. And he's like, you know what?
Damn
fuck
it,
you. ChatGPT's writing this article. Like,
but so at least give the job to Josh. He'll do it, you know, freaking pro bono here, you know?
Yeah. Oh, will he?
I don't know about that. That's a decent amount of work. But I guarantee you,
I would hire Adam as your agent.
I totally would, for real. Like, honestly, if I could contribute to a better product, I mean, at least for the league, and who knows maybe where it would go, but I'd be like, I'll be a freaking intern for you.
Yeah.
I would intern for him for sure if I had the time to do it. You got the time, man. You got this.
Yeah.
Definitely. You got this.
Damn right.
I give you permission as your boss. You should become an intern for ESPN for the UFL. You got that on tape.
Yeah.
If this shit lasts long, permission. if it lasts long enough, I think it will actually get pretty big, but it needs a chance to get established a little bit.
100%, yeah, because well, sure. It's and not just
a new league per se as well.
Yeah, you need to build some continuity.
And DC. Agreed. It's only big in two.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying. It's only big in like a couple markets right now, so they're not going to write national pieces on it, basically.
Yeah. But at least,
yeah, and that could be one of the reasons. Right, and that could be one of the reasons why it pisses me off so much is because the fact that, like, let's be honest, the Battle Hogs meet something here in St. Louis.
They
and
it's got interesting better too. Attendance than the Cardinals did on the second game. They had over 40,000 people to show up.
Yeah, like I mean, like it just it means something to people in St. Louis, and it's very interesting with the St. Louis perspective about the Battle Hawks, because there's still so many people that are just like, "What are the Battle Hawks? I don't even know." You know what I mean? It's just like I'm, you know, with my softball team. I'm around a bunch of guys that are huge into sports, and only one of them was like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I got tickets, too. And I'm like, really? Like, nobody else, as much as you guys talk about football and stuff like that, nobody else is.
And it's not like this is new. They've been doing this since 2020. This is our third season.
Now, that being said, it is hard to – it's hard to stay, like, devoted and consistent with it when you got to think that, you know, I've had season tickets now. This is obviously my third year. But it's been three consecutive changes every single year. I had the COVID year, which obviously that was going really well. That, they shut down.
That wasn't their fault, you know.
No, 100%. Yeah. But it's still a change. It doesn't matter if it's their fault or not. It's still a change. You know what I mean?
Well, of course, it's a change. Everything changed then. The whole world changed.
Yeah. Right. But but my point to that is like I've had season tickets for 3 years, and it's been a completely different rule, not rule different rules, but a completely different like ownership. And hierarchy for the entire league, all three different times. You know, this is the biggest change. So if you know, we look into our spyglass here, not a spyglass, but our crystal glass, whatever, and we look into 25 and the 26, and it all stays the same. Then yes, you can finally start getting some more and more people are going to get attached to it and get behind it more. You know what I mean? And because that's what happened with the Super Bowl. You know, and the Super Bowl
wasn't anything until people started.
Yeah, exactly. Until people started getting attached to the pageantry of what that meant, and the fact that it's like, oh, cool, you know, now the NFL or the AFC versus the NFC, and it became a whole thing from that. You know what I mean? But
that's what they're
pay my house. Tickets to the Super Bowl, Jesus Christ!
No, that's ridiculous. But the thing is that it's still a very young league, but I still think that it should be, you know, accurately portrayed at the 100%. Very least.
Well, yeah. If you're gonna do the work, you might as well do it right.
Then do it right. Yeah. Otherwise, it looks it's embarrassing. It's like, really, come on now. That's just sloppiness. But anyway.
Well, Adam, what's your thoughts so far in the season? You know, what have they done well? What do you think they need to improve on?
Well, I mean, since I was actually in attendance for the game last weekend.
I know. I wish I would have been
home opener.
God damn it.
And you weren't there, but I was. And it was awesome. It was electric. The crowd was on just absolutely loving it. I was loving it. But from the strength I saw, definitely Marcel Aitman for sure. He had a good, strong connection with McCarron, and he ended up scoring a couple touchdowns for us. And I think so. Looking forward to him being one of our receivers as well. And then Mateo Duran as well. He had a pretty impressive game, and he was rushing over, I think, over 100 yards and scored a touchdown. So, and very impressive offense, at least in that performance, on the first string performance for sure. And there were some, you know, some big plays as well. And one of them was, of course, the one I was just referencing for McCarron to Aitman. That was for a 53-yard touchdown pass as well. And then there was the 41-yarder pass to Durant. So overall, I was happy about that overall. But the thing is that we need consistency, and we need to maintain that consistency throughout the game. You know, they had a strong second quarter, but really started struggling in the third. And for me, the defense, while they did make a few crucial stops, they still need to improve their overall performance, because we're not going to be able to continue this in future games, is my fear.
Right.
You know, I think that we can be a competitive team, but we have to stay focused on the consistency and our defense, because if not, then if we do, I think that we will find success in the future. But if not, then we're going to struggle this season for sure. I have to say we got a couple lucky breaks occasionally. For example, obviously everybody now knows the I call it the famous Rizzolino a field goal attempt that was unsuccessful, the 46 yarder right at the end, and it kept the score tied, which was awesome. That have then allowed us to go down and score that touchdown and win the game. That was epic. But shortly before that, though, we almost had a pick on us, and there was a couple of opportunities there. And so we almost threw that game away. That we were very close to throwing that game away. And that is concerning to me. There are some serious things that we need to work on. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, Grant, it all worked out in the end for sure. So we're all applauding that. But that
ugly wins is still a win, right?
It is. But the thing that saved us, though, on that third down, and he almost threw that interception, it was a penalty that saved us there. It was if defensive pass interference that saved us on that penalty and gave us first down. If it wasn't for that, we more than likely could have may have lost that game. So, you know. So yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, they earned that interference penalty, though. I think that
they did. You're absolutely right. That's what
I'm thinking of. Yeah, they took him down pretty early.
They did. They absolutely did. But I'm just saying, the fact is, we were pretty much going to go three and out otherwise. If it wasn't for that penalty, I think we were pretty much going to be three and out. And I was like, son of a bitch. Because the fact is, I thought, oh, we have some, you know, we have a breath of fresh air. And then that happened. But thankfully, we ended up, you know, that defensive pass interference penalty was called. And then it allowed Durant then to run 41 yards in and get us to the 11-yard line at that point.
What the hell happened on that play? Like,
yeah.
I don't know what happened. he handed off
to Durant for another 7 yards. In front of me. And then at that point, you know, I was like, oh, my God, we're at the 2-yard line. We're going to literally, you know, run this sucker in, but ended up with they were trying to cook the clock as much as they could. So I was like, are they going to actually go for it? Are they going to run this in, or are they actually just going to ground it and kick it? Because I was nervous. I'm not going to lie. I was nervous because the failed missed. Well, technically there were two, even though one was because they iced the kicker, but they were both failed field goal attempts. For our kicker earlier. So I was very nervous. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to put this, like, the hands of the game into his hands. Like, man, we're only 2 yards out. But I'm like, well, and, you know, it's only a 23-yard field goal attempt. Mm-hmm. Man, I hope he makes it. And he did, thankfully. And then everybody was happy. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always get nervous with any sort of like non-NFL kicker, even for
stuff. Oh, yeah. Exactly. And the fact is, we're going up against Taylor Rizzolino, who is arguably one of the best kickers in the UFL, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, he was, you know, was something else, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He kicked off, I think it was like almost a 70-yard, return to us. And it was quite something, you know, like that dude, he has a leg on him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So I was a bit nervous, you know. I mean, if you remember, we were there, I think, weren't we, Josh, at the Rizzolino game where he set the XFL record. Longest made field goal with a 50-yard, or no, it's like a 58-yard. Yeah, 58-yard.
Yeah, I was about to say, it wasn't exactly 60, but it was definitely over. It was
Yeah. So, dude, I would love to have had Rizzolino back on our team, but the moment that he needed to fail, and thankfully, I'll just share. It was on the end zone that he was kicking towards was the end zone that I was in section 128, and man, we were loving that. We were like, oh, yeah, we did it, guys. You know, so that was pretty epic. He was kicking towards us and ended up missing it. So I just saw the ball coming towards me and I'm like, yes. It was epic. Yeah.
Oh, that was sick.
So anyway.
Well, hopefully be there next time, Josh. Yep. Trust me, I will be. I already looked at it. Yep, I won't have a softball tournament time around, but hey, we finished second out of 12, and we are now ranked in the state. So it, I guess, as I told you, Adam, going into that, I'm like, listen, if I'm going to miss this game, it's either we lose really quickly so I can make the game, or we take this fucker home. We almost did. So
yeah, you almost did. So I give you a pass. So. And the team gave you guys too, but they demand that you're there on 420. So there you go.
Oh, I'll be there on 420. I'll be there physically. I don't know about mentally. How about that?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I'm just a heads up that there's a couple of games coming up soon, and I think that's one of them. That's they're gonna have some early kickoff times, like 11:30 that game, and I think there's another one.
Yeah.
There's another one coming up in May 19th, and that's an 11 a.m. kickoff. Woo! There you go. We got some early kickoffs.
Yeah. And it's on Sunday this week, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's weird, but I think it's actually kind of nice that the way our schedule is, I think, isn't it? Like that we're home, then we're away, then we're home.
Yeah, it's going to be home away. It's going to be every other week, basically. Yeah, every other weekend. Yep. And it's on Saturdays, every Saturday, every other Saturday.
Except our home games are every Saturdays.
Yeah, except for May the 19th. That one's going to be on a Sunday. And, of course, that's the one that is at like 11 o'clock. So there you go.
Yeah, that'll be a good one against the Defenders. So
yeah, it will be. I'm looking forward to hosting them, and because that's going to be a kind of a rivalry game, per se, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, yeah.
Well, let's take a look here at our last segment here before we head to our sign off and talk a little bit about City, although there's really not much to talk about City. Let's get an update. They are 1-5-1 for 8 points. They are 0-1-1 since our last session. They are now 12th in the West, which has them plus four. Last time we talked, they were eighth. They're 5 points behind Vancouver, which isn't terrible because that's essentially two games. They're 19th, though, out of 29 teams in the MLS, 6 points behind the Red Bulls of New York for the first. But, I mean, I guess.
But hey, you know, we're number one in draws.
You ain't lying. That's what I was just about to say. And, you know, OJ, we'll go to you first on this one. You know, how do you think, I mean, what does City have to do to get some better results here?
Well, I mean, I honestly don't know.
Yeah,
I think they really just need to start finishing the chances they get, because I mean, a lot of these games they have some okay chances. I missed the last one as well, unfortunately, but most every game that I've seen, they've had quite a few pretty good chances, and for whatever reason they're not able to bang them home right now. And I think that's been the difference. I mean, obviously they've drawn a lot of games, so yeah, it's been a pretty big difference. But there is a lot to like about what they do too. So while we'd like to see them finish more, I also think the way they drive play has improved. Like I said, I think they're much better at moving the ball upfield quickly when they need to and all that kind of stuff. So they're a little better playing with the ball than they used to be. But they really, really, really need to figure out a finisher on this team, because like Klaus seemed to be really good at finishing last year, but he hasn't had that touch this year. So I don't know.
And it's funny that you bring that up. One of my friends on my softball team who has season tickets, I mean, he said pretty much exactly what you said. He's just like, listen, if Klaus can score on one out of every 12 attempts, we'd be solid. But it just can't happen. It's just, he's just not finding that finishing touch. So to your point, I mean, if Klaus can step it up, which we know he's capable of doing, we saw last year, right? So
right.
It's going to be interesting. Well,
at least one guy that has been stellar, at least especially in this last match versus Dallas. So same game or same day as the Battlehawks game on Saturday, and that was Berkey. I mean,
yeah, that's what I was about to say. Berkey is just saving us results at this point.
It's because we would not have only one loss. If it wasn't for Berkey,
we would have four. I've taken a look at it. And we would have a completely different team.
We only have one loss, and that is 100% on Berkey, that he has kept us, you know, with only one loss. But
see what happens
he can't say he can't stay in net and also score too. He can't, you know, he can't do it all.
But man, it is. I do love that dude because I mean. Amazing. We kind of went outside the box on that one a little bit. Most people are like, I can't believe they're spending so much money on their goalie.
Well, you know, but you saw he was goaltender of the year last year.
Well, yeah, he's a fucking stud. Like, yeah, he's been worth every penny.
Absolutely.
He's been more than worth every penny we pay him. So, yeah, like, I'm just saying, you know, people think that wasn't the standard way of building
a
team.
If it wasn't for him, we would literally be worse off because standing wise, aren't we like, well, I think we're now officially out of playoff spot per se.
Yeah,
but we'd probably be at the very bottom. We'd probably be down there in like 14th spot or whatever. Yeah,
they're treading water for now. I mean, I'll be curious to see how they look when. I don't believe Parker and Leuven are back yet, are they?
Oh, Parker's not back. I think Leuven might be back. I would have to double check that.
Okay. Because I missed the last game, so I don't remember if Parker or Leuven was back for that one. But I think missing them's hurt a lot too, because we've had weaknesses on. Well, yeah, and we've had weaknesses on set pieces that might not be as weak if Parker was out there, because he's so good at getting up in the air for those headers, you know. So we've been missing that a little bit, in my opinion. And then obviously we're missing Leuven a lot. He's one of the better players on our team, so. You know, I don't know. They're treading water for now, but hopefully they can maybe catch fire later on.
So,
yeah, that's the only thing we can do at this point. So.
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's head to our sign off here. Adam, would you like to tell the good listeners and how they can interact with the show and ask us questions on our socials?
Yes, absolutely. I would love to. I would love for the listeners to check us out on facebook.com/thehometownlosers. That's spelled LOUSERS. Give us a like, share. Definitely would love to hear from you guys. Ask away some questions and interact with us. We would love to be able to type some of your questions and address them on the show. Had a lot of fun with that a few weeks back. Or if you're on X, check us out at x.com/hometownlosers. Over to you, OJ.
Well, for our game of the week, I guess I'll go with the only one that might have playoff implications right now, which is the Blues one at noon on Sunday. Game of the weekend, I should say. So that's the one we'll go with. Of course, you also have the Battlehawks 2 hours later against San Antonio. So it's a nice little afternoon delight. Oh, and of course, you have City and Saint and the Cardinals all playing at 3. So like
all the sports. Yeah.
All the sports at once. You need to find like four.
That's pretty much what was happening last weekend. Yeah, it was because we had Battlehawks, Cardinals, City all playing in St. Louis, and the Blues were out at the West Coast. So it was wild. St. Louis was hopping last weekend. There was like over 100,000 people in attendance for the three games that were hosted. So not going to lie, it was pretty wild. So it's going to be kind of a cool time this time of year to have all these sports going on.
Yeah, definitely Sunday is a good day to be in front of your on your couch in front of your TV this week.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to it. Well, thanks so much for that, OJ. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our now infamous segment that we like to call this week's
Stat Blast.
Over to you, Josh.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate that. So, two weird, not really statistic-based, but just weird things in baseball specifically. As we know, the game's been around for a very long time, but I found something that was I thought was very interesting. So Babe Ruth, obviously, as we know, is one of the greatest hitters of all time, if not the greatest, depending on which statistical category you look at. But when he hit his 700th homer, he actually asked the fan if he could have that ball, and he did pay the fan a little bit of money. How much do you think that he gave that fan for the 700th ball? Which, by the way, that was the first time anybody had hit 700 before.
How much he gave like, them the ball?
The fan.
Or like how
the
much fan, he yeah, actually paid?
The fan.
$5.
Yeah, how much did he pay? Yeah, so $5 would OJ's got. So yeah, how much did Babe Ruth pay the fan for the 700th home run ball?
$20.
$20 is exactly right.
Is he it really? 20, no kidding?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
he paid no us $20.
Yeah. Was yeah, but that's
wow.
$100.
It's 400. No, it's 400.
I was thinking
$100,
but I was like, no, that's a lot of money back then. I'm like, maybe yeah. 20. Yeah.
So back in 1934, Babe Ruth's $20 would have been worth $466.17 today by the inflation calculator.
Okay.
Which I'm sorry, but that dude got ripped off.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Did he get anything else 100%. With it? Like, did he get like a battery thing? Or
I'm sure.
Nothing?
Nothing that was reported. I'm sure that Babe, you know, signed some autographs or gave him something as well. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
But it.
Regardless, you get a, you know, like get some merch or whatever. I mean, I know things were different back then. Yeah. I'd be like, can I get a signed jersey or something? Game used jersey? I don't know.
Yeah, something, right? Because that's a part of history. Hey, give me a part of history for. You know, you this part of history. You can have the bigger
right.
one,
a little
but give
something.
You something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, a little something. I don't know. Season ticket to the Yankees. I don't know.
So, yeah.
I guess maybe way, I guess maybe we're a little bit more greedy, I guess, nowadays than back then, I guess. I don't know. Maybe. Then again, we also didn't pay players back then nothing to play baseball either, you know?
Yeah, because they were
like
basically
slaves.
Well,
pretty much,
or at least indentured servants. Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, they were paid shit wages compared to like what they're getting paid nowadays, for sure.
Oh yeah, and their contract was owned indefinitely by teams.
Yep. Like, yeah, you're right. You're right. You're
the
like,
Yankees had your rights. You played for the Yankees unless you didn't want to play baseball.
They didn't
want to
play baseball. Yeah.
OJ, your comment about indentured servants just reminds me of baseball with Coop Cooper. It's just
exactly.
like. Exactly. Yeah, just like we'll everybody get paid the same. Back when people were treated like indentured servants. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, because okay. I just want to point it out. I just Googled it. The kid apparently was a younger guy. The kid actually did get a picture of him handing the ball to Babe Ruth. So at least he got a cool picture. So there you go.
That's what I would want. Or really,
I'd be like, I at least get a picture, you know? That's cool.
Yeah, I'd see what they would do for me if they would give me some lifetime season tickets or something.
That would be epic. I'd be like, can I
God,
get
imagine if you got
something.
That to the
it's
Yankees
zero,
now. Holy
to the Yankees.
Yeah. I mean, it's $0 or like anything out of their pocket other than just, hey, this one guy has season tickets. Like,
for life.
For life, and they already do that for people that are part of the organization in a significant enough way. So it's not like there's no framework for it. Like I'd be like, yeah, dude, lifetime season tickets. That's all I need.
By the way, so before I get to the last one here, I gotta sit there and say something about the Dodgers. So I already don't like the Dodgers as an organization, but so Shohei Ohtani hit his home run as the first of Dodgers. Congratulations to him. The reports about this woman who caught the ball, I'm getting really just aggravated about this shit. So apparently, you know, the Dodgers asked for the ball back or whatever, and so she didn't want to give the ball up originally. And so she was apparently, from what eyewitness reports were, got separated from her husband. Her husband was not allowed to talk to her while four guys from security were approaching her saying that we're going to, you know, we'll trade this off for you or whatever, we want that ball. He was saying no, and from what people are saying that again were around this area, they were threatening to not authenticate the ball, so it would have been worthless if she would have left anyways. Yeah, 100%. That's what people are saying. So because she traded the ball, that she traded away that ball with a signed bat and two signed hats, that's it. I get it. It's not a milestone home run.
Yeah, they gypped her big time.
Yeah, 100%. Like, and again, it's not a milestone home run ball,
but it's still a pretty big
his
important
first
ball
as a Dodger. Yeah, you know what I mean. I mean, if you're gonna act that way,
they kind of gypped her.
But
I think.
But
it does
the thing
sound
about it is like,
I don't know. Here's the thing. I really don't think it's worth shit. I mean, first home run for a team doesn't mean anything. You know who wanted that ball? I don't think Ohtani gave a shit. I think the Dodgers wanted that ball because they want to put it up in their Dodger Hall of Fame because you know they want to marry Ohtani to the Dodger Blue as much as they can.
Forever.
They're saying apparently worth approximately 100 G's here is what I'm
Which is bullshit. I'm calling bullshit.
And they basically exchange it for less than 10 grand here and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're saying that a Dodgers collector would probably pay like $50,000 to $75,000. A Dodgers collector.
Yeah, so somebody else isn't gonna pay shit for it. I mean, because like it said, it's his first home run as a Dodger. That's not a milestone anyone cares about.
But like, I think that is
other than the Dodgers.
I just think that is kind of ignorant though how they treated her.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, 100%. And the husband.
Like, if you don't give us this ball, then we're not gonna authenticate.
And the husband was was saying that he's actually going to be taking a look at legal proceedings, but he believes that there's really nothing they can do because again, you're in their ballpark, you're a guest technically, even though you bought.
Yeah,
tickets,
but the
right?
rules allow you to have the ball.
Yeah, 100%, but another thing is you can't make that agreement. I guess you couldn't. I guess I don't know if you could argue you're under duress or anything because I know they said something about separating.
Well, if anything, she can go to the media and it's going to make a stink about it at the very least.
Which, and you know that the Dodgers ain't going to go anywhere, unfortunately.
Yeah. I'm just saying though, it's still going to cause drama in the media.
And I'll say also, just because you're in their stadium doesn't give them the right to control your movement or your person in any way.
Agreed.
Unless you're like being violent or something. But yeah, so like
I would go up to be like
people or something.
Ohtani,
that's like no, you don't have the rights to
bullshit.
That. Yeah. Honestly, I would be criminally better that if that's really how it behaved, where they like physically forced them to be separated and shit, I'd think about pressing charges criminally because that infringes upon core rights we have as citizens in this country.
That is true.
I'm tired.
And let's be honest too. And
corporations running all over them like they always fucking do. And the Dodgers are a big ass fucking corporation.
And in today's society, all that that woman has to do is not to say that this woman is at any way what I'm about to describe, but she can sit there and go, I was separated from my husband. I was so scared. You know what I mean? She might be a strong and independent woman looking at it from that standpoint. But let's be honest. If she plays that card, then it's going to make the Dodgers, especially with this whole Ohtani crap with the interpreter going on, make it look real bad.
I just
don't know.
They did. They played that card. They played that card. That's 100%. Why that part came out about, oh, they separated her from her husband and all that shit. Yeah, they played that card.
Well, of course, they did it on purpose.
We're gonna make you look like shit.
It's called, they're going to be drugged through the mud in the media, and that's what people will do when you treat people like shit. They're going to drag you through the mud as well.
If everything happened as described, then I agree. Yeah, they shouldn't treat people that
because
way.
They basically what probably happened is they refused to authenticate the ball, and then she's going to come to the media and be like, this is what happened, and then it's going to be a big deal out of it. You know?
Yeah. No, I mean.
And the main thing was they didn't want him to influence her decision. At least that's the way it looks like from my perspective.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah. It sounds like they thought if I was on the woman. Like,
my mom still to this day doesn't get an oil change. She will have Tom do it. My stepdad. She doesn't. Uh-huh. And the reason for it is for the fact that, again, my mom's smart, again, but she doesn't know cars, and she's not expected to know cars. But when a guy comes up to you and is, like, consistently, like, hey,
you really
like,
need to
this
change
is what's
this.
Going on. But,
you need to replace your serpentine belt. I had that happen one time in freaking Jiffy Lube, and I'm like, bro, I just had my serpentine belt replaced, like, literally last month. Yeah. Well, this doesn't look like it's been replaced. I'm like, it's brand new.
I'd be like, what's Jiffy Lube doing telling me anything about my serpentine belt? Like,
I'm like, bro, just chill.
Adam, bro, it's like when I went
to high school.
He probably didn't think I knew what a serpentine belt was. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, given work they do on your oil pan, like, I don't want them touching any other part of my car. I don't take shit to places like that anymore anyway. Just, I don't trust them at all to not get me killed one way or another.
Right.
Like I spent too many times. Like when I used to do my my girlfriend's changes. You know, there was one time where she'd been getting it changed at the dealership she bought the car from forever, and I go and change it, and it's missing a gasket and a fucking washer. on two different component or O-ring, I should say. There's a I don't know if you call it, they call it a crush washer, but it's I almost call it a gasket. And then there's also missing an O-ring on a different part of it. And it's like, okay, so we're just not bothering with this shit. Like, she's lucky she wasn't leaking oil all over the place. Like,
that's my biggest thing.
And it was the dealership. You'd think they'd at least do a half okay job, but no. So I only now I take my car to places where there's actual guys that have their livelihoods on the line for it. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Real mechanic.
It's like when I did a secret shop for Dobbs not too long ago to get a free oil change, essentially. So I did that. And the guy came back to me, he's like, "Oh yeah, so you need to replace your tires." And I'm like, that's cool. Let's go see that tread. And he goes, well, I'm like, yeah, exactly. Like, if you can't point out to me and tell me that I need new tires, you're fucking like lying. There was also a different time as well that I went to fucking Valvoline and they're like, oh yeah, you need to change like your filter for your air conditioner, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's kind of funny. And they're like, why? I'm like, because I was literally here 3 months ago and I bought one from you guys. And the guy just literally goes, it didn't even say anything to me to be like, oh, my mistake, or didn't make up an excuse. He just looked at me and goes, okay, and then walked away, and then that was it for the oil change. And I was just like, okay. Like,
yeah, they're
just ridiculous. They're
people trying to take advantage of people. That's what it's all about. Yeah.
Well, guys, let's get off this subject, and let me get to the last step, and we can do our side off here. So last one here, very interesting thing. We've talked about umpires before for baseball and how that they have to wear black underwear.
Part
of their uniform regulation, which is weird. This is also a weird one. So umpires once were seated in padded rocking chairs. This was part of baseball for a long time. They were in padded rocking chairs when they were officiating games, but they were removed in 1859 after in the 1858 season, three umpires fell asleep during games.
Oh my God. So they were sitting behind the plate in a rocking chair.
They were sitting behind the game.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And they I guess that way they could actually like watch it or whatever without having to crouch over or whatever. And they could just sit there in a rocking chair and they kind of like lean forward and then lean back. I mean, that's kind of cool.
That's why you got to protect the plate with two strikes. Can you imagine how bad the umpiring used to be? Like, it probably is the best it's ever been. It's just people expect essentially machine perfection.
Well, they do, because the fact is we do have machines that can tell balls and strikes and everything now. And so people expect accuracy because of it. Yeah. Back in the day.
Well, using that, though.
They weren't using that. And everything was due to interpretation, you know.
What I'm saying is people bag on the umps these days like they're trash. It's like they're actually probably be about as good as a human can get at doing that job.
I would say so. I mean, they're the most trained professionals to do it. Except for Angel Hernandez.
There's some
only exception to that rule because he's a piece of shit. But other than Angel Hernandez, he's the only one. That's the only one.
My favorite.
By far.
He was the idiot that was sued the league for discrimination, and now every time he makes a terrible fuck up, it's like, oh, really, Angel? You think they didn't put you in the World Series because of your race? Like,
he was so controversial beforehand, and then he said that, and I'm like, dude, you're an idiot. It's just so ridiculous.
He's like, why am I being overlooked for World Series? It's like, because you're garbage. You can't. Oh, my God.
The only reason you still have a job is because you have such a strong union behind you.
Right. Yeah, and he's been around forever. But I'm like, that dude needs to retire.
I don't remember the exact game, Adam, but it was a noon game that you and I were at in our usual seats in Coca-Cola deck, right?
Yeah.
And remember, we're like, God, even the guys behind us like, fucking officiate.
What
like,
the hell is going on? Umpire
is terrible. Yeah. It was Angel Hernandez, by the way.
Oh, it was Angel Hernandez in that game?
Yeah, 100% it was Angel Hernandez.
No wonder.
I looked it up after the fact, and I'm like, oh, my God.
It was funny because the Cardinals were, like, ready to protest, but then I forgot who we were facing at that game, but they ended up coming out. The manager was like, I'm done with this shit, and started arguing balls and strikes because even they were fed up with it. And, of course, he got ejected immediately. But I'm like, both sides are on, like, like, really? Come on, dude. Like, you are terrible. But, well, and Angel Hernandez.
Because you're like, oh, that was Angel Hernandez. That's actually a pretty good officiated game for Angel Hernandez.
Angel Hernandez needs to hang it up and go in a rocking chair as a retiree. Yeah. this point.
Yeah. It's like, holy shit, I didn't even realize it was Angel Hernandez calling that game.
We'll ship in, we'll get him a freaking rocking chair, and he can, you know, just retire from the sport. That would be great. And he can go rock his days away.
We'll have to, yeah, we'll have to get in the stadium with it one way or another, but.
Yeah, well.
We'll assemble it. We'll have like 10 people bring in individual pieces.
There you go.
It's like a, like some Ocean's 11 bullshit or like a Mission Impossible bullshit.
Here, I mean, not to continue this on too much longer, but here it is 3 days ago. Yeah. Angel Hernandez made one of the worst calls of the season so far in a Blue Jays Yankees game. There you go. That was 3 days ago. The Yankees 8-3 win over the Blue Jays on Sunday.
Still
game.
Leading the way.
Yeah.
Leading the way.
Yeah, there you go. So he's still terrible.
Did you know all the Hispanic?
He literally called a ball. He called a ball on a pitch, and it, if you look at it, it was right down the middle.
Yeah. Anyway. And I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure there's some data that shows that your eyesight gets worse at tracking movement and shit as you get older too.
Like, yeah, like I know with pilots, for example, like, they can only be like there's a retirement age for them because of that.
Or forced retirement at 70.
Yeah, yeah. So like, do we need to force retirement for older umpires?
Well, I mean, dude, if I'm not mistaken, those ump scorecards that are out all the time, I think they kind of have shown that the younger umps that are newer to MLB tend to be much more accurate than the guys that are old and have been there forever.
I can see why they have better eyesight and everything else.
Yeah, exactly. They actually they have better tools to do the job.
There you go.
You know that the Hispanic community that's in the MLB officiating is like, dude, or Angel Hernandez, can you just please stop? You're making us look bad.
It's garbage.
Boy,
we're gonna ship your ass back to
Cuba. No, stop.
Cuba.
We're gonna ship his ass back to Cuba.
Oh God.
All right, guys. Well, as always, it's been a fun blast here talking to you guys. Please reach out to the listeners. I should talk. I guess it's
Please reach out to us.
To the listeners, please reach out to our socials and interact with our show. We love that. I definitely love the mailbag segment. Hopefully we'll be able to do that soon. Because that is definitely definitely one of my my favorite segments. So anyways, until next week, we will catch you here on the Hometown Losers podcast. Have a great night, everybody.
Hey, this is Josh. Thanks for checking out and tuning in to the Hometown Losers podcast. Check us out next week as we continue our silliness and talk a little bit about the St. Louis sports scene. Catch you next week.